Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Culture.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a new Winter Cults and Culture. And joining me today is Dan. Hi, Dan.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Yeah, pretty good. Been reflecting on 10 years of memorable music and enjoying every second of it.
Oh, lovely. Well, you did enjoy every second of it by living through it. I have also been doing the same, and that's because today's subject is the albums of the 2010s. I think it's worth noting that we're not talking about, tracks that we liked, that we thought were the best tracks, if that makes sense, because there's a lot of great singles I would have liked, but we're talking about albums as in a body of work. And I think it's quite, you can't just be like, but that was my favourite track and it was on this album and it's an amazing track and it makes up for all the rest of the filler. It's like, well, no, we're talking about the entirety of the album, how that stands up.
Yeah, some people take that approach and frankly, it's amateurish.
Amateur hour.
Yeah. But here you're getting
a proper
discussion of albums as a consistent body of work. With a nice ebb and flow and satisfying from start to finish.
Yes, quite. So we're going to go through from... We picked our top 10, basically, and we're going to go through 10 to 1, I think, and we'll do one each. And, yeah, just see where we end up, and we'll just, like, chat about it for a little bit. Why it made it onto the list. And, yeah, what we think. So, Dan, do you want to start?
Yeah, I'll just add a caveat here that this is a really subjective list. Like, I haven't tried to pick what I think were the best albums on merit, and there's probably loads of albums that I'm aware of, actually, that I didn't get round to listening to, even though I had 10 years. So this is really just, like, my favourite albums, and really, even, like, I struggled just to pick 10, and then I ranked them kind of like... Probably the ones that I just listen to the most are the ones at the top. Mm-hmm. And I've also only gone for one album per artist, because otherwise there were some that would have just, like, dominated the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah, well, especially kind of foreshadowing, whatever, who you've picked. I can understand why you've done that. I should say that I have got two albums on my list by the same artist for the sheer fact that I was like, I couldn't help it. And again, I feel the same way that it's kind of like, my personal top 10, not necessarily the best, what is critically the best, but what I thought was the best albums of that decade. And and what I'll do is we'll play a little bit, I think, as well, after we announce which one, so that people can get a taste of what we're talking about. But yeah. So, good.
Cool. I'm looking forward to knowing what you've put, because actually I haven't really got a strong impression of what you might have come up with.
Mm. Well, get ready for some kind of above mediocre music.
Brilliant. shall I kick off then?
Yeah, do it.
I've gone with King Buzzo and This Machine Kills Artists as my number 10. So King Buzzo, Buzz Osborne, the leader of the Melvins, releasing his first solo album in 2014. And then a few years later, Dale Crover, the other, you know, the drummer, long-standing member of the Melvins, did a solo album. So both of them did these solo albums. And honestly, both of them, the best Melvins output of the decade, in my opinion.
Right. Let's have a little listen. I'm just going to put something in here so that people can have a listen back home to this album.
Let's hear my favourite track from the album, Drunken Baby. So what I really like about this album is that it kind of harkens back to really nice basic Melvins music, like in songwriting, after quite a few years of this like collaboration with the guys from Big Business, that hasn't really been to my taste. But it's great just hearing it all stripped back, just Buzz and an acoustic guitar.
Yeah.
But he doesn't perform it like a, you know, like an acoustic kind of album or like folk. The songwriting supports, you know, it sounds bloody heavy, but it's got this kind of like restraint about it. And it feels like he's kind of gone back to being like a kind of troubadour. And around this time, he did a solo tour where it was him, just his guitar, playing these songs, playing some old Melvin stuff as well, but also like talking in between songs a lot and telling stories and anecdotes. So it's like a whole kind of like thing for him. But I think the album really worked really well.
Yeah, I remember I've listened to a bit of it, and the main stuff, well, it was mainly really because, as you said, like when he did his tour, this is when I think we were talking about the Melvins around this. Maybe you had even suggested this album. I can't remember. And I went through a little bit of a rabbit hole on YouTube, just kind of watching some of the live stuff, and then, yeah, watching some of the Buzz solo stuff, and then all the stuff crops up about, like, Buzz dissing Dave Grohl and all this, and just watching all that stuff. And found it really intriguing and interesting. And, yeah, I guess I didn't really know. I knew the bits and pieces about Buzz or some interviews and some of the stuff in the, you know, the Nirvana history books about him. But I've not actually like sat and listened to him chat for like whatever, like 10 minutes on something or other. If that makes sense.
He's a funny guy. He's a dry guy.
Yeah, very much so. It's just he's quite an interesting character to listen to.
Yeah. So, I mean, you could just sit down and watch like one of the live shows and probably go, you know, that's a really good experience. But so I was surprised actually that, you know, the songs themselves, like there's 17 tracks on this album, actually really hold up really well, you know, without all the banter. And like I said, they're really powerful for acoustic songs, just singer-songwriter. There's something, it kind of really highlights that there's something in his songwriting. It's not just like, you know, all the Melvin stuff. It's not just the arrangement and the, you know, the power behind the guitars and drums. There's something inherent in the way he writes songs.
I haven't giving it a proper listen. But yeah, I have been intrigued by it.
So, number 10 for you?
Number 10 for me. And this was probably picking a number 10. It sounds weird, but picking a number 10 was what I struggled the most with. Because there was a whole like slew of albums I liked. But I kept swapping ones in for like number 10 and then out and then putting another one up and out and putting another one in and out. And I was like, oh, like the rest of them, I was kind of like, I'm okay with this. Like 1 to 9, I'm okay with. But this number 10, I was just like, God, there's just so many that just, you know, just kind of so close together for me, if that makes sense.
It's hard because you're setting the parameter of like, this is it. This is what's in and this is what's out.
Yeah. Like this hasn't made the cut, and it's like, well, I think it should.
Yeah.
and I might give a few honourable mentions just at the end. of what I was kind of toying with, but I'm quite happy with this number 10 decision, which is Washed Out, Within and Without, which was released in 2011. Let's have a listen to it. Let's have a listen. So for people that don't know, well, you would have just listened to it now, but it's like a dream pop, nice, light sound, electronic kind of sound. And the reason why it kind of stuck with me for so long is that when I was doing a lot of stuff around America or whatever, or just overseas, I should say, and this kind of kept following me everywhere. And it was just really nice to listen to when I was like, you know, driving or like traveling here and there or just on a plane or like just walking, you know what I mean? And yeah. I always went back to it because it was like, it was non-intrusive. It was nice to listen to. And it really kind of gave me this like weird sense of like ethereal, kind of like, 'cause I'm in like a new place. Do you know what I mean? Like I'm in unfamiliar territory and just having this thing, it makes it feel like a bit like a dream.
Yeah.
And so that's why every time I've listened to it since, it kind of takes you back to that. And it sounds really weird, but like walking around, like walking around New York and all this, like really late at night and listening to this and all that, just, it has all these, so this album is kind of peppered with these weird memories. And I think I can say this for a lot of this, a lot of the picks here. But that's why over the other albums, which I was like, but this feels like, you know, this other album feels like it's a better album. It's got better songs on that, I enjoy more. I'm like, yeah, but this is like, this feels like it's something that will kind of last a longer time for me, because I've just kind of, I've taken it on a bit of a journey with me, this sound, these songs. That's kind of why it's made the list. Yeah.
More personal and evocative of a certain time.
Yeah, exactly. And it just really kind of stuck with me. And also I do genuinely think it's you know, just a cool, chill album to listen to. I mean, the front cover of, it's like a guy and a girl, like, in bed, basically, you know, so you can't really see him properly. It has that kind of feeling to it. It's like, it's very chilled. It feels like something that, yeah, you'd put on after, like, a hot, passionate night with a young lady or something like that. And
I suppose that's what the cover's going for. I always thought the cover was really strange for this, and it kind of put me off for a while
because
I bought a promotional CD in a charity shop,
right?
And I never listened to it actually, so I've still got this on my list. But I always thought it looked like a kind of like Evening Standard weekend supplement magazine cover. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean, and it's weird because I know exactly what you mean, but it's just for me, it's very fitting.
Yeah,
for what this is, but I can kind of see where you're going with that. But yeah, it's the way it's kind of like, it's a bit sexy, but not really. It's kind of like safe still. It's not like pornographic, obviously, or anything, but it's kind of got this very like, the fact they're in bed with like these white sheets or whatever. I don't know. It feels like a bit beautiful. Do you know what I mean?
It's glossy, isn't it?
Yeah. And I quite liked that. And the same way that I was kind of, not to make another Superwoman reference, but like living in a magazine, essentially, doing this stuff, that covers like a magazine and the kind of sounds that go with it a bit like that as well. Yeah. So it does kind of fit in a weird way.
It's that Brian Ferry kind of thing maybe as well, where he, do you know what I mean? He would kind of emulate these like swish, swanky, high life living kind of... Yeah, his whole look and then his album covers, because it was all meant to be like sultry, suave, sexy music. But it was quite self-aware.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I don't know if this is like being self-aware in that way. Or I don't really know that much about them. Or if it's, you know, they're just totally in that mindset.
Like, yeah, what are
it's
they?
It's non-ironic.
Are they a band? What are they?
What are you? I think it's just one guy.
Reveal yourself, one
reveal
guy.
Reveal yourself, man. Chill Wave. I suppose it is called Chill Wave, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's that funny because you were talking about the image. The cover for Within and Without uses an image that also appeared in the May 2011 issue of Cosmopolitan magazine.
Hey.
Accompanying an article titled, "Is this the most satisfying sex position?" yeah, apparently they got it they went to the photographer and used it. Apparently it's just one guy, but I don't know his name or anything like that.
Yeah.
It doesn't say. It should do, shouldn't it? But yeah, I don't know. And I think there's a few people that kind of dip in and out with it, like the vocals or whatever and stuff like that. It's a sub-pop thing. Oh, here we go. Ernest Weatherly Green Jr. He's 37 years old. Here we go. Born October the 3rd, 1982, to be specific.
Bastard.
Yeah. So that's Washed Out, Within and Without.
I will definitely get round to listening to that. I did try to listen to it a few weeks ago, but at work, and yeah, probably put it on and then someone wandered over and was like... Mm.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite good background music, to be honest, you know what I mean? It's kind of, you know, you don't have to sit there and be attentive to it or anything. Just let it kind of wash over you.
Oh.
Your innies and your outies. So what's your number nine?
I've gone with Beak.
Mm-hmm.
And I've gone with their album, which it's very difficult to say the title of because it's just three kind of, I don't know what the hell they are, these little arrow things on the keyboard. Basically, it's right. The third Beak album.
Okay. So should we have a little listen?
Yeah, sure, why not? Difficult to pick like a best Beak album. I really like their debut album, but that was 2009. That would have probably been on my list if it was a year later. This one, it came out 2018, and it's just really, really satisfying, like modern kind of kraut rock with some elements of prog and a little bit of the kind of like trippy, trip-hop, Portishead sound. Because obviously it's Jeff Downes from Portishead, his band. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't necessarily know that. But yeah, there's a little bit of their sound in there. But mostly it's just like these guys, feels like they're just like having the time of their life, playing really like 70s-inspired, like long, jammy, droney, but also quite beautiful music.
Nice. We saw them live, right? Supporting
we did.
Someone. Who support? OCs?
That's the one.
Yeah. And I liked it. I don't know if I loved it. I think you were kind of getting... I mean, obviously, it was the first time. It's obvious, but first time I'd heard any of these tracks. So I felt like, you know, you and others there might have got a lot more out of it. I quite liked it. There's a couple of songs where I was like, this is really good. Just Beak It, I suppose. Yeah.
A lot of their songs feel like they're leading up the what do they call it, motoric drum beat.
Oh,
lots of vintage synths.
Oh, we like that.
Good standard krautrock stuff, basically. And then you're like, What's the payoff to this?
Well, it's one of the greatest bass lines of all time.
Yeah.
okay, cool. Well, I guess going on to my number nine is Cloud Nothings, Here and Nowhere Else.
It starts right now.
Yeah, Here and Nowhere Else was released in 2014. And for people that don't know, I think I've talked about Cloud Nothings a bit before, but for me, they're the most, well, one of the most grungiest, like post-Nirvana bands that still keep that, still do their own thing, but still keep that energy and stuff, if you know what I mean. And maybe not like on stage, because to be honest, they're like three, like pretty ugly, geeky guys. Do you know what I mean? You know, I know we talk about Nirvana, but like Kurt was basically like Brad Pitt or whatever, and they definitely like were jumping around the stage a lot. These guys don't really do that, but he does have a really like great Kurt sounding voice. Okay. And what they do when you hear, I mean, like they're all really like the same as Nirvana was. They're all really good at what they do, and it all works differently, but it comes together really nicely for this, like, to make this sound. And also, like, the stuff that he does, like, feels really simple, but is actually fairly complicated, or is, like, various enough to kind of keep you interested. And, yeah, some of their releases have found a better than others. Like sometimes you feel like, oh, they've not really made much of an effort with this one. But Here and Nowhere Else was the first of their albums that I got into. Apparently it's their fourth LP. It's their third studio album, but it's the first one that I actually listened to. So that means it's been going for a while, and they're super young as well. And they, you know, they're releasing an album every like couple of years or whatever.
Yeah. Cause they released, it looks like five albums in the decade.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah. So what's made this one stand out?
Just for one thing, it was the one that kind of introduced me to them.
Mm.
And two, just going through the tracks, I just think it's got much stronger tracks. It's one of those things where I'm like, you know, each track of the album you're listening to and going, oh yeah, fucking hell, I love this one. Yeah. And then it finishes and then another one comes on. You're like, oh yeah, shit, I forgot about this one. It's great. And then by the time you've got to the end, you're like, oh yeah, that whole album is actually really good. And especially like in these days where it's like, I'm kind of just picking, not like everyone, I suppose, picking tracks that I like rather than just listening to an album. This is one of the rare occasions where I will listen to, I'll just put the album on instead of picking like, I want to listen to that Cloud Nothings track. I'll just be like, I want to listen to that album.
Yeah.
And I think it, you know, it says a lot, when you can do that. And that's what I feel like with all these albums, actually.
That's not what the NME felt.
Oh, really? What did they say?
I'm just looking at the scores on Wikipedia. They only gave it 5 out of 10.
Yeah.
They are the dissenting voice, though, amongst the masses.
I mean, seriously, fuck NME. I was having this Instagram conversation with Suit Woman, funny enough, and they put up how the NME said, oh, there's one good thing that when they, with the Living in a Magazine promo, whatever, that the NME got sent, there's one thing that this is good for, and that's as like, ammunition for the bin or something like that. And it's like, yeah, that's fucking NME. Like it was just run by a bunch of twats and it still is, really.
Yeah.
I don't know, just weird.
I always used to hate them. I should really check out Cloud Nothings. I don't know why.
You'd really like it. You would, yeah. Like, oh, in all honesty, it's not like, it's pop grunge. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, but not in a bad way where it's, you know, shitty songs. Like, these are actually interesting, cool, sounding songs. But yeah, it might not even be their best album, really, even of that decade, maybe. But I've listened to their other stuff, but I always come back to this album for whatever that's worth.
I'll start here.
Yeah.
Did you play one of these songs on our much lauded show?
I did.
In the shed.
I did. I think. Yeah. I would have done. I think I did.
So.
Yeah. I think what was the one they did afterwards? I'm just looking. I think. Yeah.
No so, life for me.
Life without sound. Yeah, was also good. And that was the one they did afterwards, yeah. But I was like, yeah, it's not so great. And then, yeah, last Building Burning. Again, I liked it. Maybe I just need to give them more of a listen. So Right So Clean was pretty good. That was on the last album. But still, I always come back to this one, Here and Nowhere Else. It's good.
Sounds good. I'll put it on my list.
Yeah. Should just check it out. Okay, Dan, what is your... Well, we'll say it's number 8 now, right?
Number 8, indeed. One of my bands of the decade that I really kind of went a bit wild for. King yeah. Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard.
Mm. Let's have a listen. Are we doing... We don't know which album.
All will be revealed. But first of all, they released, I mean, everything they've done has been this in the tens.
Right.
So their whole career, just been that one decade, yeah? They did an EP.
Yeah.
15 albums.
Fucking hell.
15.
That's mad. Yeah, this is what I was saying at the top of the show with this band in particular. how much stuff has been released. There's no wonder you'd be like, I'm just going to pick one, because otherwise it's a bit ridiculous.
But I have picked just one, because that was the law.
Mm.
So I've gone with Gumboot Soup.
Mm.
And I reckon we should play The Great Chain of Being.
Oh, lovely. Let's have a listen to that.
One of the heaviest songs in their canon.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really representative of the album as a whole. The reason I've gone with Gumboot Soup was, so this was the last album that they released in 2017, which was the year that they had that run of 5 albums in one year.
Blimey.
And basically Gumboot Soup, it's kind of like a best of that year in a way. Right. It's like you can hear on certain songs that this was probably from that project and this was from that project, but it's not like they just shoved together all the offcuts.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like they picked a prime cut,
yeah,
from each of those albums, or a couple, you know.
Yeah.
So it really is like, if you want to get a sense of what they were doing in that year, you can listen to like the best of everything all in one album.
Wow. What more can you ask for?
Exactly. And it's great because it explores, you know, like some of their kind of lighter acoustic-y, like 70s jazz vibe and some of the folk stuff. Like I said, it's like crushing heavy Great Chain of Being. They let some of the other members of the band write a few songs on this one.
Right.
And everything's just done with like such a high level of detail, I think, both in terms of like the playing's fantastic. They're really great musicians, but the production's really nice as well.
Mm-hmm.
To me, you know, when a band goes through so many changes like this and puts on so many hats, you know, and it starts to become a little bit gimmicky.
Yeah.
Every album, it's like, what are they going to do this time? They're going to do, you know, speed metal. Are they going to do some disco?
Yeah.
But it doesn't feel tokenistic. It feels like they really love these genres and understand them and respect them.
Yeah.
So they're writing within them extremely well.
Hmm. Nice.
But yeah, I mean, they just, their output, everything they've done in 10 years is really amazing. And, you know, and they've built a huge following. They've got their own record label, and this huge body of work now. But yeah, I mean, like if you were starting out with them tomorrow, I'd go with Gumboot Soup.
Yeah, I don't know what I've listened to of them, because Rich recommended, our friend, mutual friend Rich, Keeble, Richard Keeble, recommended a few, recommended them to me as well around the same time that you did. And I think he made me some kind of playlist or something. And it was, I think other stuff was kind of mixed in, Hot Snakes and all this stuff.
That's no good. That's no good. You need a King Giz.
King Giz all the way.
Exclusive playlist.
Yeah, so I need to, I kind of touched upon it. It was like, I like this, but I didn't. Again, just one of those things where you're just like, I haven't got time to listen to something new. You know what I mean?
The nice thing about Gumboot Soup, you know, it'll give you the measure of them, but it's like, all the songs are really like super accessible as well. It's not something that takes a long time to get into. Now I'm looking, I'm like, maybe there are albums that are better as like a, you know, one consistent sound or one consistent kind of statement. But I don't know, Gumboot Soup's really fun. And it's just, goes down smooth.
Ooh, lovely.
Like a lovely tagliatelle, a lovely mulligatawny.
Yeah. Delicious. I guess now we'll go to my number 8. Which was, again, a tough choice. Well, I'll tell you this first. So it was Everything, Everything, Man Alive in 2010. Let's have a listen to some of that.
So hang on.
Mm.
What's the name of the album?
Man Alive.
By?
Everything. Everything.
Wow.
It's got the guy who sings really high.
The guy from Sparks.
No. start again. This album, I only remembered. Well, not that I remembered it, as in, but I only realised was released within that decade, this decade, the last decade, because of going on to other sites and thinking, just Googling, you know, what are their top 100s or whatever? Like, is there something I've missed, basically, that was released that I was like, oh, I didn't realise? Because loads and loads of stuff that I absolutely loved was released in 2009.
Okay.
And it was really annoying. And then I remember... and I saw someone had put this on fairly high and none of the other lists did. I think maybe it's Consequences of Sound, I can't remember. And I was like, fuck, I loved this album. And the reason why is I saw them perform at Reading Festival on the BBC introducing stage, which if people, I don't know if it's still like this anymore, but as soon as you walk in, it's the first stage you see. And literally I was watching them and there was about six other people standing around me just watching it. Do you remember the BBC introducing stage at Reading?
Yeah.
It's just so, like, I don't know what it is now. But yeah, it was just like a little, you know, like 10 foot by 10 foot thing as soon as you walked in. And there's a lot of them as well. And I remember thinking, God, they've totally like been squeezed onto this tiny stage. And yeah, I was watching it and I was like, one of the rare times I was like, I'm going to watch the whole thing. I don't know who they are. And there's everything. And then after that, I tried to get some of their singles that they'd released. And then a friend of mine worked at Sony, I think it was. And he was like, oh, do you want to go see it's everything and someone else. And they had like one hit song. They were very 80s. They were a bit like Pet Shop Boys. And I can't for the life of me remember their name. And their album was okay, but it was them and everything, the support act. And I went along, went to all these weird gigs with him. And yeah, and I saw them again. I was like, man, so much better now. Like they feel like so much, like in front of a proper audience. Okay. And I saw them a few times since. Oh God, sorry, I'm really going on for ages. Basically, I saw them grow as a band. And then the combination of which was this album, which finally came out, which had obviously a lot of the songs that I'd already been privy to leading up to it. But what was weird is that the songs that I hadn't heard were probably my favorite songs on the album, if that makes sense.
Couldn't be better.
So yeah, there was one song, for instance, Come Alive, Diana. I don't think I'd heard of before or whatever until this album was released. And I was like, man, this is really great. And the thing was, he has a very unique way of singing, but the songs are like super catchy. And it was kind of as like that kind of, what was it? New Rave or whatever, the kind of Klaxons thing.
Oh yeah.
This was kind of at the end, like it had already reached its crescendo years before this, but this was like coming out of that. Like, this is becoming something else. And this is kind of where you started to get a bit of, you know, Foles already kind of doing stuff. You know, Metronomy, and things like that. They were starting to come out of that a little bit and everything was part of that. And they just kind of exploded. And then basically people just got bored, same as I did, of the guy's voice and that sound. And it was like, yeah, okay. So when they released their next album after this, I can't remember what it's called now, but I remember thinking, all right, yeah, it's the same. There's nothing wrong with it. It wasn't like bad songs, but I was like, yeah, I've heard this though. And I've heard it better. It's like, this is it, really. This is kind of, but then like, what more do you expect? It's kind of, it turns it into a bit of a gimmick, unfortunately. But at the time, this album was great and I listened to it a lot. And when I was listening back to it, recently, I was like, man, these songs are really good. I really enjoy them. Again, it's not going to be for everyone. I think his singing will put off a lot of people. And it was very much of that time, some of the songs. Mm-hmm. But it was like rotated on my playlist for, I would say, a good like 2 years or something probably. And that's why when I saw it, I was like, man, how did I forget this album? But of course, it's because it was a whole decade ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, August 2010.
Yeah. So of course I'm going to forget it. But at that time I was like, this is like the album of the year kind of thing. Like nothing's going to touch this because it was like I'd waited for it for so long. You know, it'd been built up for me personally for ages. Finally gets released. Like they've re-recorded all the songs that they'd done before. You know, they've done it better. I'd say check it out because it's quite poppy. So, you know, it's very accessible if you can get on with his voice, which I did and I actually really liked. And it's something a bit different.
Man, last time I had that experience was Idlewild's first album.
Oh, right, yeah.
You know, that like anticipation of like you're seeing the band performing live and you like a few singles are coming out.
Yeah.
And you're waiting for the album and then you get it and then you're like, wow, there are songs on here that I like even more than the ones that I already knew I loved.
Yeah. Well, what was the great thing about Idlewild is that, well, for me personally, as much as I love like, was it Hope It's Important?
Yeah.
It was 100 Broken Windows that I was like, you know, that it was like their... in New Joe. I don't want to say that because it's not probably not the best comparison, but it's in that was like, wow, I thought Hope is Important was better.
Yeah.
And they went on to make something even better than that, like an epic rock record.
Whereas Everything
didn't do that.
They made an album that you didn't like.
It was fine, but the same way Idlewild kind of did the same, but they turned their sound and they kind of made it more kind of less punky, but more experimental, and did, and I feel like kind of gave it like a much bigger thing to it, and every song felt like it had its own identity.
They made it crunchier as well.
Yeah.
You know, I realised a few years ago that the producer for that album was Bob Weston.
What's he done?
He's like Albini's side man. He's in Shellac.
Okay.
And I think he worked on In Utero.
Right. Oh, right. Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
So maybe it was a good comparison in the end.
So anyway, a little diversion there.
Yeah, sorry.
A little tidbit. Pitchfork Media, Sam,
mm-hmm.
to be provocative,
mm-hmm.
what do you think they gave Man Alive out of 10?
I believe it did really well.
Metacritic say a rating of 72 out of 100.
Yeah, quite positive. I'm going to say Pitchfork gave it a 4 then.
Yeah, 3.8.
Right, oh man, that's good for me. What do they say? Why do they not like it?
Oh, I haven't got that far.
It doesn't matter. I can kind of guess. It's honestly, it's one of those albums where I'm like, someone said, I hate it. I'd be like, yeah, I can understand that. Like, it's just got a weird sound to it. But for some reason, I just really liked it and still like it. Because I don't think anyone's like done, it's just its own thing. Do you know what I mean? Like, as much as I got bored of that sound quite quickly, it's still their own sound. Like, there wasn't anyone else kind of doing that, maybe a little bit.
They have said that in their concluding statement. It's a complete mess, but it's certainly their mess.
Yeah, I think that's right. I know why they say it's a mess, because it's like, as I said, there's a lot of stuff like thrown at it, and it kind of, but that's what I like about it. You know what I'm like? I like kind of stuff that's so, you know, as much as I like, you know, a melody and all this stuff, stuff that's like, oh, I didn't expect that.
Yeah.
Or like, what the hell is this? This is weird. I like that, and that interests me. So, yeah. And that's a bit like that, if that makes sense. It kind of goes more up that street.
This band has completely passed me by, though.
They would have done. I mean, they're very, like, early noughties.
I've never heard of them.
Yeah, you still see them pop up on, you know, festival lineups. I don't know if they're releasing stuff anymore. But, yeah, again, it was very much of that time. Like, 2010 to 2012 was their, like, they were like doing the festival circuits, you know, they had a bit of a following, people like me, they were, you know, there's good life as well, pretty good life, but still it just kind of fizzled out like all these things usually do.
Well, I like the sound of it, and I'm going to go away and give QWERTY Finger a listen.
Yeah, QWERTY Finger's good. That's, again, it's an album where like they've got some quite slow tracks, they've got tracks that build and have like these big kind of crescendo endings, and yeah, they have like very accessible, easy, poppy kind of tracks. There's, what is it, Photoshop Handsome, I believe, it's got quite a cool music video where it's all like, I think it's all like 8-bit or something like that. It's all a bit like pixel and weird.
Photoshop Handsome?
Handsome, as in to a beautiful male.
Oh, right. Like Hanson.
No, not like Charlie Hanson. It's Charlie Manson's cousin. Yeah, all right, sorry, we kind of went off on one. This is gonna be a long one, isn't it? Do you remember we were working it out time wise? was like, yeah, let's not go too deep, and just totally gone off on one.
Nah, this is good, let's just roll with it.
Let's go with it. Okay, is it your number 7 now?
Number 7.
What is
number
it?
7, Rolling In. I see a bad moon rising, but I also see a moon shaped pool. My Radiohead.
Oh. That's
a lovely album from 2016. Introduced with the lead-off single Burn the Witch. This is a
passes onward and gone. Burn the Bitch. This is one of the few albums that I actually know fairly well.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is it on your list?
It didn't make my list, and to be honest, I forgot about it. I didn't really... it was one of those albums that when you said it, I'm like, oh, yeah, that was really good, wasn't it? And I've not I've not put it on.
What a state of affairs where Radiohead gets overlooked.
I know, it really forgotten. Is. Yeah, sorry, go on.
Yeah, and I had to think about Radiohead, and I had to think about Tom York and Atoms for Peace as well. Do you remember that side band he had?
I do, yeah.
And I kind of liked all of it. I liked everything that he had a hand in.
Hmm.
I didn't like The King of Limbs that much. That was one of my least favourite. Because that was 2011. And this album, it was just like such a kind of return to... Well, form makes it sound like The King of Limbs was just like terrible. It's not, you know, they intentionally tried something different and it wasn't to a lot of people's tastes.
Yeah.
But this was like, you know, this is like a classic Radiohead kind of cozy sound, really. Kind of fan-pleasing sound, I think. And it's just really satisfying. It's 11 really good songs. Again, you know, lots of the sort of like emotional and textural tones and changes throughout the album that you'd expect from Radiohead. You know, nothing too outlandish, and just really, really satisfying, beautiful album.
Yeah. It's, he did something recently, didn't he? Which, I can't remember what it was for, but it was a marketing campaign where it was something like, you know, do you want to live your dreams or something like that? And it was just like a phone number.
Oh yeah,
this is quite recently. It might have been like
Anima,
and yeah, that's it.
This is Anima. Yeah, that's really good.
But I didn't listen to it. But I just enjoyed that whole marketing campaign. I thought it was great.
Yeah, it was good. Have you seen the? Because it's on Netflix, isn't it?
Oh,
it's
no, I haven't watched it. It's directed
like 20-minute short film.
Yeah, it's directed by someone famous, like Fincher or something. But I don't think it's as big as that. I'll have to check it out. Yeah, I didn't watch it. Is it good?
Yeah, it's really good. I really liked it. Yeah, soundtrack's good. Coming off the back of the Suspiria soundtrack as well, which I really liked.
Mm.
Got myself a vinyl copy of that. But also, I really liked the Atoms for Peace stuff. I know a lot of people were a bit funny, didn't like it that much. I thought that was great. So there's lots of stuff. I mean, I could have put another, you know, Tom York album on here, but anyway, this sort of squeezed everything else out for me.
Yeah, I need to go back then and listen to it again, because I haven't listened to it well really since it came out, I suppose. When was it out?
2016.
Yeah, it's a fair bit. Yeah, I need to go back and check it.
Do you like the? Did you see the Burn the Witch video when that came out?
Yeah, was it? It was like was it animated?
Yeah, it's a sort of like spoof of the old kids' TV show, Camwick Green from the 70s.
Oh, right, yeah.
But they essentially, you know, there's like the, I don't know, Windy Miller or whatever he's called. But they turn out to be basically, it's the plot from The Wicker Man.
Oh, really?
So it's quite subversive, yeah.
No, I don't think I've watched the whole thing then.
This guy turns up and it's all like, oh, it's all nice, twee, 1970s kids thing. And at the end, yeah, they like force him into this like structure.
Oh, that's brilliant. I'm just perusing through it now. It's literally Wicker Man. Fucking hell. That's really good. No, I haven't seen that. Yeah, that's brilliant.
It was quite nice that song, again, pretty accessible song, and humorous video, kind of like signposted just a slightly different
Radiohead
tone to this album.
Right.
That you're going to get something that's going to be quite commercial.
Mm.
Yeah. So,
cool. Good choice.
Nice album. What's next from you?
Moi. Number 7 on my list is The Twilight Sad, No One Wants to Be Here and No One Wants to Go Home. Story of my life. released in 2014. So let's listen to a little bit of that. Yeah, Scottish band. I did, so last January was the song that I played on Three Hits and a Shit a little while ago that we did. And this is from the album. Again, they've released other albums, which are good during the last decade. But same thing that goes for Cloud Nothings, really. This, I found on an old Spotify list when I was kind of searching for stuff I was listening to back in the early decade, I found like a couple of other Twilight sad songs on the Spotify list, but it obviously hadn't clocked with me like properly, if you know what I mean. It was only really with this album that they got on my radar, and specifically with last January. And then when I listened to the rest, mainly the first half of the album, I was like, this is amazing. Like, it's really melodramatic and epic. And it's funny because recently I saw because I wanted to go see Robert Smith did a thing in London, as in of The Cure. And and Twilight Sad were playing, Interpol were playing, they were playing, and I wanted to go, but it was on my daughter's birthday, so I couldn't.
Was it like Meltdown?
It might have been Meltdown. Yeah. And I was really excited about going because I was just like, man, like, he's chosen my fucking perfect lineup. It's ridiculous. But I couldn't go. And I was listening to an interview with him recently, Robert Smith, and he was basically saying the best band that are around at the moment, the most exciting band, are the Twilight Sad. And I was thinking, well, it's kind of interesting he says that. But now I've listened to them with him in my head, I'm like, it's because now I think about it, they do sound quite a lot like dark Cure songs. Do you know what I mean? And well, not even the dark ones, like some of the lighter ones as well. But I was like, fuck, yeah, they do sound quite Cure-y actually. And I'd never really thought about that until Robert Smith was like, you know, kind of raising a flag for them. And yeah, so anyway, with this album in particular, it's got some really dark, strong tracks. He's got a great voice, and it's full of like, full of drama and emotion, and it's all about, you know, just basically being all this melancholic like sadness, and like, you know, I can't be who you want me to be, and like unrequited love and depression, and you know, but again like trying to find these little like elements of hope still within that. And yeah, the background of this are these big like sweeping guitars, and quite, you know, that's what I liked about last January, is its weird use of like synths and guitars, which make give it quite a ghostly kind of sound. And that kind of runs throughout the whole album. So it's quite a unique listening experience. And there are still, there's a couple of tracks which I'm a bit like, hey, like, you know, have to get through these. But the strength of the, of like 80% of the tracks like holds the rest of it up. If that makes sense. So again, it's a bit of a depressing album, but every time, it's one of those albums where I'm just like, what should I was like, you know, I'm driving or whatever, walking around, I was like, what should I listen to? I tell you what, I could listen to fucking Twilight Sad, and I'll stick the album on, I get excited about listening to it because I feel like I'm listening to it almost for the first time again every time I listen to it. I don't understand how that works, but it just does.
It's right in your wheelhouse, this kind of thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Cracking album cover as well. The artwork's really cool.
Yeah, it's cool.
So you prefer this to It Won't Be Like This All The Time?
Yeah, probably, yeah. Again, it's because there's just the rest of their discography is still strong. But to me, I'm just keep comparing it to this album.
Yeah.
And this album kind of always wins out. So that's not to do a disservice to anything else, but I'm just like, I like the tracks on here more. And when I'm listening to it, I'm like, yeah, that sounds good. And there's still a couple, I can't remember offhand, still a couple I'm like, okay, yeah, I'll listen to those, fine. But then I'm still in my head making the comparison to the tracks that are on this album. And I'm just like, well, I could listen to that album, or I could just listen to the Twilight Sad album I really like, and which is the same kind of sound, but it's just better. So I'll just do that. I'm interested in what they say here, like post-punk revival and indie rock. I also like the fact the guy like sings with a Scottish accent. So like and this is totally stupid, but just like singing along with it is actually quite fun.
Okay.
Because you're like rolling your R's and it's all like, you know, it just sounds a bit different than like an American nasal snivelly, drivelly tone. It's like this deep Scottish kind of, you know, editor's style singing, like almost a bit Ian Curtis-ish, but like, you know, a bit more professional, let's say. A bit more shine to it.
This is your go-to for like post-punk driving karaoke party.
Yeah, if I found this on a karaoke machine, I'd be like, hell yeah, I'm playing this. Yeah, but I do recommend it if you're into that kind of thing.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Shall I hammer you with number 6?
Please do.
Which is Black Star by David Bowie.
Interesting. What track do you recommend playing?
Black Star by David Bowie. So this is just amazing album, to have released an album like this at this point in David Bowie's career, even before you get onto the discussion about, you know, the fact that he recorded this knowing that he had a terminal illness. So in that short period of time where this had basically been reviewed and released before he died...
Mm.
Which I'm trying to remember, it was such a short time frame, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was like super short. It was literally I think it was literally, yeah, like within a week or something. It's weird.
I think it was days. It was scary. It was shocking, wasn't it? I'm just reading Wikipedia, 2 days after its release.
Right.
So, but in that short period of time, the discussion focused, you know, on the music here. And it's really remarkable because he had this like comeback album the next day. I think, I can't remember when that was, about 2014 maybe.
Right.
Which is a very safe album, which is fair enough. And it's, you know, good satisfying album. And then he's done something completely different here, introducing this kind of like it's jazz, and you know, the thing is he worked with Donny McCaslin and basically like got him, saxophonist, and his band to be his band for this album.
Okay.
But it's kind of, it's really modern and introduces sort of like, it's quite dark sound, this kind of like a fusion kind of jazz sound. Mm-hmm. With his kind of, you know, quite cryptic lyrics, which then obviously, yeah, a couple of days later, everyone realised this is all about his impending death.
Yeah.
And reflecting on concepts of mortality and looking back at his life and his achievements, what will his legacy be? And so it's incredibly emotionally affecting, and a huge, you know, heavyweight piece of work.
Mm. Yeah, I felt bad because I didn't like it.
Outrageous.
I remember I listened to, like, pretty much a lot of people must have done, as you know, as soon as he died. And I remember thinking, yeah, it's not for me. And I haven't gone back to it after that first listen. It wasn't even really a proper listen. I didn't really do it the service it probably demanded for, like, the respect of David Bowie. I've got a bit of a David Bowie story, actually, a real one, not a fake one like we did on the on the comedy show thing, which is kind of going off on a tangent. But I'm name dropping here, but I like to think I'm still friends with, but I was closer friends with, let's say, Matt Berry, the actor.
Oh yeah.
Because I worked on IT Crowd, and that was the series that he was series two. Then that's the series that he was in. He was introduced as a character, and that's how I got to know him. And he's been doing tons of stuff now. He's in the What We Do in the Shadows TV series for our American viewers. He did Toast of London, but he's done loads of stuff. Anyway, he was in Moon, if you remember, that was with Sam Rockwell. That was directed by Duncan Jones, who was obviously David Bowie's son.
Oh, yeah.
And, Matt plays, when, I don't know if anyone who remembers the film, there are scenes where Sam Rockwell's character is talking to Earth or whatever. And in it, like on the video screen, that's Matt Berry. And actually there's another guy in it who's Benny Wong, who I played poker with once, who went on to do, who's in all the Marvel movies now, funny enough. And yeah, it's another name drop. But I was speaking to Matt after that film, and he was saying how, I think he was at the wrap party for the film, and Duncan came up and he was like, oh, I've got someone on the phone for you. And he was like, hello. And he was like, hello, Matt, this is David Bowie. Or however he speaks.
Was this when he was
Jimmy,
in decline?
Not Jimmy Hill. Who I mean? Not Jimmy Hill. Jimmy, he was the one that got done for being a pedo. Jim will fix it.
Take your pick.
He was the Jim will fix it guy. Jimmy Savile. I've made him sound a bit like Jimmy Savile. Oh, yes. Rather than David Bowie, who's more up here. But apparently he was like, oh, yeah, hey, Matt. And apparently David and Matt was like, because he's massively into his music and all this stuff as well. He was like, oh, fuck, wow, David Bowie, whatever. And basically David Bowie was banging on the phone telling Matt how much a fan he was of his work. And apparently started doing an impression of him to him. He started doing an impression of Matt Berry to Matt Berry. And Matt was like, it was the weirdest experience of my life.
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah, that's quite funny. And I just like, as much as all the people talk about, you know, the God that's David Bowie, I like that idea that, you know, he does stuff like that. You know what I mean? He's still like a human that watches these kind of things.
Well, he did that spot on Extras, didn't he?
Yeah, exactly.
It was really good.
But even that was like a little bit like, I hated Extras, I'm going to be honest. I shouldn't say this so much in terms of, because I know some of the people involved, whatever, but like Extras was just felt like to me, Ricky Gervais going, I've got famous mates now. Like, oh, and he does this whole thing where he keeps trying to be, his whole shtick from then and still today, even at the Golden Globes, is like, I'm just an everyman who's now rubbing shoulders with all the celebs, but I'm, you know, I'm still, I'm like you, aren't I? But I've made it to this like upper echelon of like celebrities. And I hate that. I hate that so much. And it's just so lame. And I also don't find it particularly funny these days either.
It worked in extras, I think, but I can see that...
I didn't like it.
You know, now it's become laboured.
Yeah, but even at the time I was watching it going, okay, I get it, you can get David Bowie in your episode. Little fat man, or whatever, and it's like, yeah, okay, this feels like it's an old 70s sketch. Like, it doesn't feel, like, fresh, and it's because you've basically gone, what can I do with David Bowie? Do you know what I mean? You haven't been like, yeah. I've written a sitcom. How can I... And then I'm going to get famous people to play the characters. It's like, right, I can get Samuel Jackson. So now I've got to write a scene around Samuel Jackson and maybe do something that's a bit, you know, playing on the fact that, oh, look, because he's like black and he gets mistaken for Lawrence Fishburne and all this stuff. I'd make a joke of that. And it's a bit like, right. Do you know what I mean? It's like, let him have his fun. Fine.
Yeah, I can see where you're coming up.
And that's what extras felt like to me. But people be like, no, but it's about the relationship with like, him and that woman and like a fame and all this stuff. It's like, it's not. It's a vehicle for him to show off his mates and, you know, kind of be like, here, I'm bringing all my Hollywood A-listers back to America, back to England for you little people.
And of course, he appears on Black Star. He's the subject of the song Lazarus.
Are you joking?
Yes. A 6-minute epic about how Ricky Gervais killed his career and then re-rose from the dead.
Yeah, he didn't kill it. It just dwindled out because it was just, you know, stuff that he's been doing for the past, 15, 20 years now probably or something. Sorry. Jesus, went off on one. Black Star, David Bowie.
I'd say this all the time, but this is one where it's worth picking up. An LP, if you can play a vinyl copy. Because, well, it'll force you to actually sit down and listen to it properly and engage with the experience of this album. But, you know, there's like a big deal around the packaging of this thing.
Mm.
Do you remember all that?
Well, it's just a Black Star, isn't it?
Essentially, yeah. It's, on first appearances, so it's die cut, you know. So it's black,
okay.
A black sleeve, and then a star has been cut out of the front.
Right, that's
cool.
So
you can see the vinyl inside, and the vinyl's in a transparent Perspex inner sleeve.
Right, that's quite funky, isn't it?
Yeah, so you take it out, and you know it's black, and then inside it's black. And then people realised over time... And it took a while for this to come out, but
it's white.
People noticed if they left it in the sun.
Oh, here we go. Yeah. It melts.
A pattern was emerging. No, there was some sort of like solar sensitive ink.
Weird.
And people continue to have theories and think they keep finding more and more secret messages and things. And in the end, the artist came out and said, yeah, he'd worked with David Bowie to really think about this. And, people think, yeah, there's references, further references to, like, you know, his life and, like, the whole thing, the music, the lyrics and the packaging was meant to be this, you know, final statement and a sort of letter, love letter to his fans as well.
It's quite nice because I suppose it's the idea if you think I've only got so long left and you've got something like that, that means that there'll be, like, something, you know, almost like his, how do I put this? As you said, like a bit of a love letter, but the fact that it's like something's fading in over time, it's like he's left you a little present. It's more than the album. It's something, basically what I'm saying is that he's doing that knowing that when he dies, there'll still be something there, if that makes sense, that's new.
Yeah. It keeps giving and it keeps evolving.
That's nice. That's cool if that's actually what it was meant to be.
Yeah, and he got to write his own epitaph, essentially.
Yeah. Which such a shame.
Who can say that about themselves?
Literally one of the coolest fucking dudes ever.
All the young dudes.
I liked his album, Lau. It's good.
That's a good one. anyway, that's Black Star.
Black Star. And, okay, let's talk about my number 6, which is Wild Beasts' Smother. Some other. So we kind of, motherfucker. So we kind of talked about this a little while ago. I can't remember what we were talking about it on, but how...
Three Hits and a Shit,
that's it. And the album Two Dancers, I think it's called, I can't remember if that's right now or not, was 2009 again. And this was 2011, and I went to see them on this tour as well. And for me, it wasn't as grand as their previous album, but I would say about half the album is absolutely amazing. whereas the album before, all of it was amazing. I would say about half of this is amazing. And there's some tracks which, like, you know, when you listen to a song and you're like, oh, this isn't as good as I remember it, then all of a sudden it's got like an ending or like a middle bit where you're just like, oh yeah, fuck, this is why I love it so much. Because it's just like, it's been building up to like something else, if that makes sense. And you realize that's the bit that you like, and you kind of, and the rest of it is there to serve this change or whatever. Some of the tracks feel a bit like that. And funny enough, the main guy, well, I say the main guy, but it's about this kind of two lead people in this, the higher voiced guy, has just released a new album, a solo album, in the wake of Wild Beasts now not being a band anymore. And it's pretty good. It's actually all right. I might play it on the Three Hits and a Shit. It's very personal. You know, it's basically kind of pretty much him and a piano. But it's, you know, it suits his voice very well. It's not got, Wild Beast is still like quite rocky, and it's got those kind of Sigur Rós sounding like sweeping guitars, you know, that we talked about the other day. And that's like the Wild Beast side. This is very much more, his solo stuff is very much more stripped down. Daniel something his name is. But yeah, Smother, this is where they, you could tell they're kind of starting to think about going more synthy. Not that they hadn't done it at all before. But this was kind of, for me, this was like the limit. So this was their last, you know, really good album, I reckon. The other ones after it were okay. But yeah. I just, I thought it was great. And yeah, released 2011.
You highlighted this as one of your faves, didn't you, in, on that episode we did?
Yeah.
Was this the album then that you, was this, you know, the song you played, was this from this album?
No, that was from the album before. But yeah, I mean, there's a couple of songs here, which, my God, I'm just like, some, might be some of the best songs I've ever heard. Like, like opening, like Lion's Share, kind of gives you a bit of a sense, but it's kind of a bit, you know, epic and a bit dramatic, and they kind of play with that a little bit, be a bit self-aware of it. But songs like Loop the Loop and Reach a Bit Further, every time I hear it, I'm just like, oh my God, I love Wild Beast so much. Like, why were they not like the biggest band in the UK or something? Like, I just don't get it. Like, what were other people listening to that wasn't this? For God's sake. But again, it's, I kind of understand some people don't like some of the, you know, the voices, some of the music, I guess, is a little bit, I mean, it might be a bit too wishy-washy for some people, I don't know. But yeah, really great, strong album, and I highly recommend it. Yeah, that's it. Hayden Thorpe is the guy who's just released his album. I can't remember what it's called or anything, but yeah, if you liked Wild Beasts, then go and check it out. Just Google it. I can't be bothered.
I realised I keep getting confused. I keep conflating Wild Beasts and Cloud Nothing. Right. And thinking about this band, Wild Nothing.
Yeah.
I think every time you've mentioned Cloud Nothings to me and Wild Beasts, I've thought of Wild Nothing.
Yeah,
which is a very different kettle of fish.
Yeah. No, sir. No, this is more up the Twilight Sad zone. We're kind of going in that area with this album and Wild Beasts.
Gotcha.
I would recommend checking it out. So as this is an extra long episode, I've split this into two, so that's it for now, but come back next time to hear our countdown from number 5 to number 1. See ya.
Winter culture.